Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
If it sounds incredible that I would vote to withhold life-saving treatment from an infant, that's because it's not true. Here are the facts. There was a bill that was put forward before the Illinois Senate that said you have to provide life-saving treatment that would have helped to undermine Roe versus Wade. The fact is that there was already a law on the books in Illinois that required providing life-saving treatment, which is why not only myself, but pro-choice Republicans and Democrats voted against it.
Now, Senator Barack Obama, the last presidential debate, when asked about, well, he was actually challenged by John McCain, the opposition, saying to him, look, you failed to vote for, you voted against and actually killed in committee a bill that would have protected in law the survival of a failed abortion. Of course, the bill was something similar to the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. It's a simple thing. An abortion is performed and the abortion fails. The child lives. What do you do? Well, since there is no binding law, or there hasn't been a binding law about this, hospitals and abortionists were free to kind of do what they wanted to. That's why the Born Alive Infants Protection Act was an attempt to draw a line, a very modest line, that would protect this survivor of a failed abortion. Now, Senator Obama says it was superfluous. He says it would have undermined Roe v. Wade, and it didn't really need to pass anyway, so we voted against it. Hadley Arkus joins us. He's the author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. He's a professor of jurisprudence at Amherst College, and he joins us to talk about Senator Barack Obama on the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. Hadley, welcome back.
Oh, good to be with you again, Todd.
The Obama campaign has expressed outrage that anyone would accuse him of not protecting a survivor of a failed abortion. What do you make of the outrage?
This is like Chico Marx's line. Who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? You know, he has been so clever in trying to talk himself out of what he himself actually did. What do you call a situation where you would refuse to provide the protections of the law to a newborn because that child survived an abortion? I mean, it goes back to the case that brought forth the Born Alive Infants Protection Act in the first place, a case called Floyd versus Anders from Tennessee, where a child survived an abortion for 20 days, underwent a surgery, died. The question was put, was there an obligation to preserve the life of that child? And the answer tendered by Judge Clement Haynsworth was no. That's not a child. It's not a child protected by state law. That is a fetus marked for termination. In other words, the mother decided on an abortion. So the right to an abortion is the right to an effective abortion or a dead child. When we came forth with that bill, the Born Alive Act, NARAL, National Abortion Rights Action League, opposed it because they saw the implications of saying, establishing their very modest but telling premise, that even the child marked for an abortion has a claim to the protection of the law, a claim that doesn't pivot on whether anyone wants her. The curious thing about Barack Obama is that he apparently saw the issue precisely as NARAL did. NARAL was talked out of its opposition and told, just go along with it. You'll embarrass us all if you have us, the Democratic Party in the Congress, voting for infanticide. So they held back. And the Democrats, out of prudence, held back. But apparently he didn't get the Democratic playbook. And so we have this oddity that by the end, by the time the Born Alive Act came through the Congress in 2000, not a single Democrat, in either house of the Congress voted against this bill to offer the protections of the law and medical care to the child who survives the abortion. And so Barack Obama is virtually alone among Democrats at the national level in opposing that measure to preserve the life of the child who survives.
Okay, so let's sort fact from fiction, Hadley, on what Senator Obama did or didn't support, what he killed in committee, what actually occurred when Senator Obama, as a state legislator, had the opportunity to say yay or nay to a law that would protect the survivor of a failed abortion.
Well, he led the opposition to it. He explicitly led the opposition to it. He claimed later that he would have voted for the bill in Illinois, the equivalent of the Born Alive Act, if it had contained a clause put into the federal bill saying that nothing in this bill shall call into question anyway an abortion performed at any stage of surgery, any stage of a pregnancy. That was completely unnecessary because the bill dealt precisely with the child who survived. It was no one was quibbling about the human standing of the child. So the bill worked its effects by simply pointing out that child can be protected, has a claim to the protection of the law. The fact that it wasn't wanted does not mean it ceases to be a person. And now it's born alive. We're not quibbling about its human standing. He said that, well, you didn't need that provision, that extra clause, but he said he would have voted for the Illinois bill if it had contained that provision saying that nothing in this bill, in its Illinois version, would touch or call into question any abortion. But then it turned out that the bill in Illinois did contain precisely the same clause that was contained in the federal bill, and it was been adopted in a committee chaired by Barack Obama. So he voted in favor of that bill, that amendment to the bill, before he voted against the bill itself. Now, he voted present, as the legends ran, over many, many things. But in this one, he clearly took a position. He was clearly against it. I think he voted four times against this bill.
Now, he's also said that he rejected the Illinois bill because it contained no exception for the health or life of the mother. What do you know here?
That's absolutely irrelevant. I mean, the health of the mother is absolutely irrelevant because how does it affect the question of giving care and comfort to a child who survived the abortion? The child is out. What is it now? If the mother is ill, do you kill the child? I mean, what's the point of that?
Okay, then I want you to talk a bit about the genius, both philosophically and legally, of the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. You called it many times, and others have also observed that it is the most modest of protections for the, in this case, the born. Talk about the genius of the act.
Well, thanks. But actually, Todd, you've gone over this. You know the thing as well as I do myself, and I wrote it. My gosh. I'll accept the genius, and you have to share it with me since you've been so good in expounding the logic of this thing. It was, you know, when the bill on partial, you know, remember that awful surgery on partial birth abortion was there. We were twitted by one notable federal judge by saying, "You people never made a claim to protect the child herself. So why does the state have any compelling interest simply in shifting the killing of the child from the birth canal back to the uterus?" So he had a point. I'd been arguing years earlier that this was the place to begin, where no one was quibbling about the human standing of the child. The child was not in any way encumbering the interests of the mother. The child was out. Now, can you concede to us that this is a human being who has a claim to the protection of the law? And as you know, Todd, we never concealed our intention. We said we're going to just try working step by step, because if that's a human being and you can protect it, we'll ask you the question, well, what has changed about that being from 7 minutes earlier, 7 weeks earlier, 7 months earlier? It hasn't altered in its human standing. It hasn't ceased being human at any, or become human at any point along the way. So we think we can unravel your whole position, but we thought we'd start there. And that's exactly where NARO was afraid of it, what the National Abortion Rights Action League. And this is exactly the point picked up by Barack Obama. He said this would eventually call into question Roe versus Wade. And it would, not by sort of restricting the procedures right away, but by calling to question the premises of Roe versus Wade. Can you not see this as a human being? And you people with college educations who support this thing, have you not had any minimal education in biology? Do you really think that the offspring of Homo sapiens, the offspring of human beings, is anything other than human at any stage of the pregnancy, that it goes from some kind of an animal into a human? I mean, you should know that. So what are we arguing about? I mean, if this is a potential squirrel or a pigeon, an unwanted pregnancy would not pose a problem. Wait till it comes out and we'll see what it is, and if it's an orange, we'll throw it away. But it's a problem precisely because people know exactly what it is. They know what's in the human womb. There should be no professions of wonderment by people with college educations, and someone with as much formal schooling as Barack Obama has should not stand there with a straight face and tell us it's over his pay grade to look into a book and inquire into these matters. So the strategy of it was, look, we're going to start a conversation. Remember, as I wrote this originally, as you remember, Todd, for the debating kit, I wrote this for the first George Bush to say that, look, this matter has been governed so long by the courts that if this question of abortion is it returned to the political arena, we need a conversation among ourselves as we begin to legislate again. Let's begin this conversation in the most modest way at this point. The people who are pro-abortion, pro-choice, insist that they're not in favor of infanticide, which means they're willing to protect the child at some point. So we say, let them tell us when.
Okay, let's take a break. Let's take a break right there, Hadley. When we come back, I want to pick up right there with Hadley Arkus. It's Monday, November the 3rd. Hadley Arkus is professor of jurisprudence at Amherst College, author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. I do want to hear from you. We've got 10 more minutes in this hour of issues, et cetera. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. By the way, we've got some great resources written by Hadley Arkus posted under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. More with Hadley after this.
What is it, Captain?
Whatever it is, it's incredibly advanced.
Hey, iPhone users, you can now listen to Issues Etc. live on your iPhone. Find out by going to piratechristianradio.com and click the iPhone link on the homepage. You no longer have to sit by your PC, laptop, or home radio to listen to Issues Etc. live. piratechristianradio.com and look for the iPhone icon.
With something much, much more. And it's going to change everything.
A lot of us across this country are really thankful to be hearing your voices again.
Dr. Albert Mohler, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, with his thoughts on the return of Issues Etc.
It's great to be with you guys on Issues Etc. Welcome back. A lot of us across this country are really thankful to be hearing your voices again. It's always great to be with you guys.
We're talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at www.issuesetc.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Abortion and human rights.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
While many issues warrant political and social attention, all human rights are built on the right to life. Thomas Jefferson clearly understood this when he said, "The care of human life and happiness, and not their destruction, is the first and only legitimate object of good government." On some issues, various candidates may find common ground, but that is rarely the case with abortion. What common ground is to be found between life and death? We have to choose which to support, and no candidate can have it both ways. It is important that we choose carefully.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. For more about our work to mobilize and advance pro-life women in politics, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Senator Barack Obama on the Born Alive Infants Protection Act with the author of that act, Hadley Arkus, professor of jurisprudence at Amherst College. Hadley, before the break, you were saying, look, the pro-abortion, pro-choice forces say we're not in favor of infanticide. You say that the goal of this act is simply to ask, okay, so when are you not in favor of infanticide? Finish your thought there.
Oh, but I think we've actually passed. But this is what, when I wrote the bill originally, we assumed that most people in the country would be shocked by the notion of infanticide. But I think you've got to understand what the crisis we're in right now, Todd, is that we're well past this point. I take some of my students at Amherst, liberals and Democrats, and we have a small meeting we had. Faced with this evidence about Obama, they concede now, you're right, he was, in fact, in favor of infanticide, which means that as we make ourselves suggestible to it and accept it, what we're saying is infanticide is not a deal-breaker with us. We can't tell you when we're opposed to infanticide. We're willing to accept some infanticide as the implication of our support for abortion. That is, his position was, so committed was he, Obama, to preserve that right to abortion unimpaired, unrestricted, that he was willing even to withhold protection from a child born alive. Now the young liberal Democrats will say that's their position too, and it's no big deal. And I'd say this is the dramatic situation we're in now. Right now, imagine this is a different kind of country from the one we grew up in. To think that people can absorb in themselves the notion that infanticide are us, that one of the implications of our position is that we are affably willing to accept infanticide, and it is no big deal. It is no deal breaker. It's simply one among many other issues, and our argument is it cannot be merely one among many issues. But I think that is the tragic part of what we're coming to right now. We think once the word got out in this country, liberals and Democrats and Republicans, are they not shocked by the notion that here is a candidate who would accept infanticide itself rather than accept even the slightest restriction on abortion? And yet, people are willing to overlook it and say, no, well, I understand it, but it's not going to deflect me from voting for a liberal Democrat. Well, I'd say something has happened to the notion of what it means to be a liberal Democrat when something of that has taken place. And that, I think, is the nature of the crisis. What kind of a people we are talking ourselves into being with this? You remember the old lawyer joke where the devil tells the lawyer, look, I'll give you all the women and money you ever wanted. At the end, you give me your soul. And the lawyer says, what's the catch? You know. And I'm afraid we seem to be reaching that point. Don't you see, you have a candidate who says, it is no big deal. We have to accept infanticide and protect it. And they say, yeah, what's the problem?
Joe is calling from his car.
Right.
Joe, thank you for waiting. Welcome.
Hi, Todd. Just today, I got into a rather protracted argument with an African-American lady in my office about this very issue. And I pointed out to her, suggested to her that she sit down and read the Dred Scott decision next to Roe v. Wade, look at the similarities in the legal rationale for the two. I pointed out to her that for her, more so than anyone else, it should be very problematic to support someone who is legally and morally willing to subjugate the rights of one class of human beings to another. I pointed out to her what happened in Nazi Germany and how the Jews lost legal protection in a very short period of time, actually. And her response, the bottom line, was she's doing what's best for her. She's voting for what she thinks is best for her economically.
Joe, thank you very much. Hadley, your thoughts there?
Well, I remember I had the same reactions from a woman in law school, Loyola, about a dozen years ago. We pointed out Lincoln's argument. Remember Lincoln had this fragment about why you justify making a slave of the black man is because he's darker than you are. Beware, the next white man that comes along with a complexion lighter than yours may enslave you. And we use the same principle logic about abortion. Why is that child in the womb less than human? Doesn't speak yet, neither do deaf mutes. Doesn't have arms or legs. Other people lose arms or legs without losing anything necessary to their standing as human beings. We point out to parallel the arguments, and she said, well, Lincoln was then, this is now. That is, what you're finding with people who have no concern about the principled ground of their own rights, who cannot reconcile the decisions they take one day with those decisions they take another. This is a person who thinks my interests, she thinks, will be served by Barack Obama. But the oddity of this is that blacks, about 13% of the population, have, according to one figure I saw, about 34% of the abortions. In Washington, D.C., where I spend half my time, there are more black babies aborted than born. So you're talking about a policy that has actually been reducing drastically the black population, keeping it quite down. And so the curious thing is, Barack Obama is in his attaching himself to the feminist and to the liberal coalition, is willing to accept a policy that has its main effect in killing vast numbers of black people, and that's why Planned Parenthood targets black communities for its main clinics. They know where the target is. It's one of those sad, odd things and the inversions of our current situation. The people most damaged by it can't quite see that the ground on which people flex this right to abortion is utterly at odds with the grounds in which the law encompass the protection of black people.
Josh is listening in St. Louis. Josh, welcome.
Thanks for taking my call, Todd. I wanted to point out a gross inconsistency in Barack Obama's view. When a illegal alien in this country gives birth to a child, Obama is of the opinion that that child, as soon as it's born, has legal rights under the Constitution, that child's a native-born citizen. But he holds that a child born to a U.S. citizen in an abortion clinic at a botched abortion attempt, that child does not have rights. That child can be killed. I think that's wildly inconsistent on his part.
Josh, thank you so much. Hadley, 1 minute to respond.
Well, it's just the same old proposition that they would extend the protection of the law to children born alive, except for one notable exception, the child marked for an abortion. That child was not meant to be delivered live. It was meant to die. And so the right to an abortion is the right to an effective abortion or that child, and the law which covers other people will not cover that child. It is a real crisis. And, Todd, thanks very much. I too, appreciate the return of your voice to the airwaves. Good to have you back.
Thank you. Let's get one quick call in here from Aaron. Aaron from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Aaron, our time is very short with Hadley.
Yep. Okay. Quickly, how do I respond to a person who says that the president, a friend of mine, says that an Obama presidency would actually decrease the abortions since George W. Bush and under even Ronald Reagan, abortions increased? I don't know where he's getting these statistics, and I don't know how to respond to someone like this.
All right, Hadley, you got about 30 seconds before we have to close up.
It's false. Let's say I could have a song that induces most people to reduce the number, talk themselves out of abortion, and you're leaving intact the notion, I still have this right to destroy an innocent life for reasons that rise no higher than my self-interest or convenience. The abortions have decreased, and even if he did bring them down, he would still leave intact the very principle that is the source of such disfiguring in the American soul today.
Folks, before you vote tomorrow, go to our website tonight. Click On Demand and read some of the great articles written by our guest, Hadley Arkus, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click On Demand. Hadley Arkus is a professor of jurisprudence at Amherst College and author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. It's always a pleasure. Hadley, good to talk with you again.
Oh, great. Good luck, Todd. Good luck with your new venue, and I hope you'll carry the state now. I'm counting on you to do it.
Thank you very much. It's a tall order. Tomorrow on the program, we'll be discussing Satan with Dr. Lewis Brighton. Okay, I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again, because this is my last chance before tomorrow, except maybe for the late voters. Why should you go to the polling place tomorrow and cast your ballot however you cast it? It's very simple, and it bears directly upon the conversation we've just finished with Hadley Arkus. Not only do your rights depend on it, even if you're only voting in your own self-interest, think about what Hadley has said. Your rights are built on the same foundation as that child's rights, the child who survives a botched abortion. Their rights stand on the same foundation as yours. So to undermine his or her rights is to undermine your own. Now, that's your own self-interest. And if you want to vote that way, well, just be my guest if you want to vote in your own self-interest to protect that child. But a far better reason to vote is for that child's self-interest. Remember, we as Christians vote for an entirely different reason. We vote not only to protect our own rights, our own self-interest. We vote first and foremost to protect the rights and the self-interests of our neighbors. And I'll tell you what, folks, if the unborn, or in this case, if the born, if they don't qualify as our neighbors, nobody does. If the unborn does not qualify as your neighbor, then no one does. So when you step into the polling place tomorrow, think about your neighbor. You can think about taxes, the economy, the war, all of those things are very important. But what rises above them all and cannot be paralleled by any of them is your neighbor's self-interest. This is true selfless self-government. To go in there and cast your vote, knowing what may be best for you, but in the end, voting what is best for your neighbor, for the unborn too. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc. Talk to you tomorrow.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.